Welcome back, listeners, to Sandman Stories Presents, a folklore podcast where I read you to sleep or until the next story. I'm your host, Dustin. Today we are back in the Panchatantra. Last episode we heard about how Godly, the holy man, was duped by the cunning June, and how Rusty the lion is falling into vice. In this chapter we will learn about how one can use intelligence to kill an enemy that brute force alone could not stop. Okay. Let's begin. How the Crow Hen Killed the Black Snake. In a certain region grew a great banyan tree. In it lived a crow with his wife, occupying the nest which they had built. But a black snake crawled through the hollow trunk and ate their chicks as fast as they were born, even before baptism. Yet for all his sorrow over this violence, the poor crow could not desert the old familiar banyan and seek another tree, for three cannot be induced to go. The deer, the cowardly man, the crow. Three go when insult makes them pant. The lion, hero, elephant. At last the crow hen fell at her husband's feet and said, "My dear lord, a great many of my children have been eaten by that awful snake, and grief for my loved and lost haunts me until I think of moving. Let us make our home in another tree, for no friend like health abounding, and like disease, no foe. No love like love of children. Like hunger pains, no woe." And again, "With fields overhanging rivers, with wife on flirting bent, or in a house with serpents, no man can be content. We are living in deadly peril." At this the crow was dreadfully depressed, and he said, "We have lived in this tree for a long time, my dear. We cannot desert it, for where water may be sipped and grass be cropped, a deer might live content. Yet insult will not drive him from the wood where all his life was spent. Moreover, by some shrewd device, I will bring death upon this villainous and mighty foe." "But," said his wife, "this is a terribly venomous snake. How will you hurt him?" And he replied, "My dear, even if I have not the power to hurt him, still I have friends who possess learning, and who have mastered works on ethics. I will go and get from them some shrewd advice of such nature that the villain, curse him, will soon meet his end." After this indignant speech, he went at once to another tree, under which lived a dear friend, a jackal. He courteously called to the jackal forth and related all his sorrow, and then said, "My friend, what do you consider opportune under the circumstances? The killing of our children is sheer death to my wife and me." "My friend," said the jackal, "I have thought the matter through. You need not put yourself out, for that villainous black snake is near his own doom by reason of his heartless cruelty. For of means to injure brutal foes you do not need to think, since of themselves they fall like trees upon the river's brink. And there's a story. A heron ate what fish he could, the bad, indifferent, and good. His greed was never satisfied, till strangled by a crab he died." "How was that?" asked the crow. And the jackal told the story of the heron that liked crab meat. There was once a heron in a certain place on the edge of a pond. Being old, he sought an easy way of catching fish on which to live. He began lingering at the edge of his pond, pretending to be quite irresolute, not even eating the fish within his reach. Now among the fish lived a crab. He drew near and said, "Uncle, why do you neglect today your usual meals and amusements?" And the heron replied, "So long as I kept fat and flourishing by eating fish, I spent my time pleasantly, enjoying the taste of you. But a great disaster will soon befall you, and as I am old, this will cut short the pleasant course of my life. For this reason, I feel depressed." "Uncle," said the crab, "of what nature is this disaster?" And the heron continued, "Today I overheard the talk of a number of fishermen as they passed near the pond. 'This is a big pond,' they were saying, 'full of fish. We will try a cast of the net tomorrow or the day after, but today we will go to the lake near the city. This being so, you are lost. My food supply is cut off. I too am lost, and in grief at the thought, I am indifferent to food today.' Now when the water dwellers heard the trickster's report, They all feared for their lives and implored the heron, saying, "Uncle, father, brother, friend, thinker, since you are informed of the calamity, you must also know the remedy. Please save us from the jaws of this death." Then the heron said, "I am a bird, not competent to contend with men. This, however, I can do. I can transfer you from this pond to another one, a bottomless one." By this artful speech, they were so led astray that they said, "Uncle, friend, unselfish kinsman, take me first, did you never hear this?" Stout hearts delight to pay the price of merciful self-sacrifice. Count life as nothing, if it end, in gentle service to a friend. Then the old rascal laughed in his heart, and took counsel with his mind, thus, "My shrewdness has brought me these fishes into my power. They ought to be eaten very comfortably." Having thus thought it through, he promised what the thronging fish implored, lifted some in his bill, carried them to a certain distance to a slab of stone, and ate them there. Day after day he made the trip with some supreme delight and satisfaction, and meeting the fish, kept their confidence by ever new inventions. One day the crab, disturbed by the fear of death, importuned him with the words, "Uncle, pray save me too from the jaws of death." And the heron reflected, "I am quite tired of this unvarying fish diet. I should like to taste him. He is different and choice." So he picked up the crab and flew through the air. But since he avoided all bodies of water and seemed planning to alight on the sun-scorched rock, the crab asked him, "Uncle, where is that pond without any bottom?" And the heron laughed and said, "Do you see that broad, sun-scorched rock? All the water dwellers have found their repose there. Your turn has now come to find repose." Then the crab looked down and saw a great rock of sacrifice, made horrible by the heaps of fish skeletons. And he thought, "Ah me, friends are foes and foes are friends, as they mar or serve your ends. Few discern where profit tends. Again, if you will with serpents play, dwell with foemen who betray. Shun your false and foolish friends, fickle seeking vicious ends." "Why, he has already eaten those fish whose skeletons are scattered in heaps. So what might be an opportune course of action for me? Yet why do I need to consider? Man is bidden to chastise, even elders who devise devious courses arrogant, of their duty ignorant. Again, fear fearful things while yet no fearful thing appears. When danger must be met, strike and forget your fears. So before he drops me there, I will catch his neck with all four claws." When he did so, the heron tried to escape, but being a fool, he found no parry to the grip of the crab's nippers, and had his head cut off. Then the crab painfully made his way back to the pond, dragging the heron's neck as if it had been a lotus stalk. And when he came back among the fish, they said, "Brother, why come back?" Thereupon he showed the head as his credentials and said, "He enticed water dwellers from every quarter, deceived them with his prevarications, dropped them on a slab of rock not far away, and ate them. But I, further life being predestined, perceived that he destroyed the trustful, and I have brought back his neck. Forget your worries, all the water dwellers shall live in peace." And that is why I say, a heron ate what fish he could, and the rest of it. "My friend," said the crow, "tell me how this villainous snake is to meet his doom." And the jackal answered, "Go to some spot frequented by the great monarch. There seize a golden chain or a necklace from some wealthy man who guards it carelessly. Deposit this in such a place that when it is recovered, the snake may be killed." So the crow and his wife straightway flew off at random, and the wife came upon a certain pond. As she looked about, she saw the women of the court playing in the water, and on the bank they had laid golden chains, pearl necklaces, garments, and gems. One chain of gold the crow hen seized, and started for the tree where she lived. But when the chamberlains and the eunuchs saw the theft, they picked up clubs and ran in pursuit. Meanwhile, the crow hen dropped the golden chain in the snake's hole and waited at a safe distance. Now when the king's men climbed the tree, they found a hole, and in it a black snake with a swelling hood. So they killed him with their clubs, recovered their golden chain, and went on their way. Thereafter, the crow and his wife lived in peace. And that is why I say, in cases where brute force would fail, and the rest of it. Furthermore, some men permit a petty foe, through pure blind heedlessness to grow, till he who played a petty role grows like disease beyond control. Indeed, there is nothing in the world that the intelligent cannot control. As the saying goes, intelligence is power, but where could power and folly make a pair? The rabbit played upon his pride to fool him, and the lion died. How was that? Asked Cheek. And Victor told the story of Numbskull and the rabbit. Those poor crows. How nice it was to see them get rid of that terrible snake. And at the same time, the snake was just being a snake. And I really enjoyed the story of the crab ending the abusive bird's reign. This story just keeps getting better and better. I look forward to the story of the rabbit and the numbskull. I kind of wonder how it will go. No listener or podcast shout out this week. Just go out there and be good and do good. Thank you, and good night.